This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Get out the vote efforts are expected to be particularly active come November 2nd. Anyone who needs help getting to the ballot box this time around should not have a hard time finding an enthusiastic campaign volunteer from either side willing to lend a hand. But what if that voter does not have the cognitive ability to understand the voting process? A team of doctors and attorneys recently took up that question and floated a proposal in last month's Journal of the American Medical Association. Their idea, a test to measure voter competence. We're going to hear from one of the doctors who helped write that proposal and from a lawyer concerned about how it might actually work. We also want to hear from you. Is there someone like this in your life, an elderly relative, for instance, someone with Alzheimer's? If so, how do you handle voting? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Joining us now by phone from the airport in Raleigh, North Carolina, is Dr. Jason Karlowicz. He's an assistant professor in the Division of Geriatrics at the University of Pennsylvania and a member of the Dementia Voting Project. Good of you to be with us.
Thank you, Neil.
Why did you wade into this issue?
4 years ago, right around this time, we all suddenly discovered and heard about the butterfly ballot. It was among the sorts of late-night jokes that maybe the people in Florida, the elderly people there, couldn't understand the ballot because of cognitive problems. And I'm a clinician as well. I take care of patients with Alzheimer's disease, and I began to think in my own clinic population, how would we decide when one of my patients, has reached a point where they're no longer able to vote?
So what are you proposing?
Well, once we started to look, we realized there's not much guidance. And in fact, much of the guidance that's out there really reflects antiquated understandings of cognitive ability and concepts of capacity and competency. And we searched around and did find, though, a case from the state of Maine back in 2000 or so helped articulate what it means to be competent to vote.
In that case, I believe that was, again, a case in 2001 in connection with a challenge to a voter competency regulation in Maine.
Yeah.
A federal court made a decision in that case and rejected the state's disenfranchisement of people placed under guardianship for reasons of mental illness. The court said that law violated their due process and equal protection clauses.
Exactly. Yeah, and that Maine case really is kind of a fire bell in the night for other states to wake up and take a look at their either statutory or constitutional provisions which disenfranchise people on the basis of really antiquated understandings of decision-making ability. Mm-hmm. Maine was a good example of that. You know, if you were under guardianship because of mental illness, you couldn't vote, and that's silly. You could be under guardianship because of a head injury, and you could still vote. That, you know, discriminates on the basis of merely the label of mental illness. And number two, it didn't get to the heart of the matter, which is not that you're under guardianship, but have you been found to lack the ability or capacity to vote?
Well, who would write this test that you're proposing, and who would administer it?
Well, the judges in that federal case set out a standard that we thought captures what is essential, which is an objective standard that gets to the heart of the matter, namely, do you understand what voting is? Not, you know, who do you want to vote for or why do you want to vote for them? And what the case articulated was that to be competent to vote, you need to understand the nature and effect of voting and have the ability to make a choice. And that very simple standard, I think, sort of sets a reasonable threshold and also avoids any judgments about who you want to vote for or why you want to vote for them.
And how big a problem is this?
Well, it depends on what you mean by what is the problem. I mean, if you've come at it as someone interested in the sort of civil rights of Americans to exercise a fundamental right, that is to vote, it's a problem because many states in the union right now still disenfranchise people on the basis of status of like being under guardianship. For example, Missouri and the Baselton Center, I understand, has just taken Missouri now to court for just the same reasons as the Jill, Jane, and June Joe took Maine to court. But there are other ways to frame the problem, too. Namely, in long-term care settings, you've got a large proportion of the residents who have cognitive impairment and a small number of people, the staff at the facility, who have charge of what they do from day to day. And one of those tasks is voting. And our group began to look into how voting happens in long-term care and found, unfortunately, another area where there's not good guidance, then current practice is, I think, less than commendable. Mm-hmm.
Well, not everyone welcomes this idea. Joining us now from her office in Washington, D.C. is Christina Galindo Walsh. She's a staff attorney at the National Association for Protection and Advocacy Systems. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Why do you think this is not a good idea?
Well, you know, first of all, I want to say that we agree that many voting laws involving mental competency are overbroad and should be revisited to conform with the standards set forth in the Maine case. Actually, the Maine case was brought by our affiliate in Maine, the Maine PNA. We think it's a good decision. However, the testing solution, which has been proposed in the JAMA article, strips the legal integrity of that decision by depriving an individual of their voting rights, not through a formal hearing and its legal protections, but instead it takes what should be a legal determination made in consultation with experts or other professionals qualified to make those determinations, and it puts in the hands of nursing home workers, family members, and poll workers. I mean, these recommendations are fraught with potential for abuse. You know, I, along with many of my colleagues in the disability community, are very concerned about these informal tests, which have been proposed. I mean, not only do they harken back to the use of literacy tests, but there is little to no way to safeguard against abuse.
Mm-hmm. Yet at the same time, there are people who are clearly past it and don't have the capacity to vote anymore.
There probably are, but I'm probably thinking that is in a minority. I mean, obviously it is important to protect against voter fraud, but not at the expense of stripping away the rights of people who have the right to vote. You know, there's obviously you obviously want to protect against that fraud, but I'm thinking that there has to be a better solution, and going through, and as the doctor suggested, you know, having states reform their guardianship laws to tailor it to see whether an individual understands the nature and the effect of the act is fine, but that determination needs to be made by experts, not informally.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you make it a panel of experts, a panel of doctors?
Well, just under a guardianship hearing, you know, under a regular guardianship hearing, you have to go before a court, and there's professionals who will go ahead and determine whether, you know, the individual has, I mean, competency determinations are quite complex. Some people communicate in different ways. It may be difficult for testers to understand what they are saying or vice versa.
Yeah, okay.
So you need to have people who understand this. But the proposal that's put forth is for just lay people to do these testings.
Mm-hmm. And your proposal that you're coming back with involves courts are pretty crowded already.
I understand courts are crowded, and you know, these are different special courts. You know, guardianship. You know, most states have special guardianship hearings. But just because a court is crowded, I don't think that's a good reason to disenfranchise somebody who's entitled to vote.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I think a critical issue here is that based on work we've done, actually asking people who long-term care facilities. After real elections, the question, do you decide whether residents are competent to vote or not? Unfortunately, we found in about 80% of nursing homes in the city of Philadelphia after the last mayor's election that the answer is yes, we do decide whether people who live here are capable of voting. And then we ask them how they decide that. And unfortunately, the methods they use really run ragged over constitutional rights, namely, you know, tests of cognition, you just know it when you see it, or even worse, you know, we ask them election-related questions like who's running and what are the issues. So this is going on, unfortunately. People are deciding whether the residents of a facility are capable of voting or not. And what we propose is two things. Number one, guidance based on the DOE standard to decide whether someone's capable. And number two, taking this out of the hands of facility staff and putting in the hands of election officials who should go out to facilities to get people registered, get the absentee ballots delivered, and assist people who need assistance in administering them. And if any way along that process there's questions about their competency, the DOE standard can be applied by election officials to decide whether someone's capable of voting.
And
it's
just
going
tell us,
on now. We need to clean it up.
Yeah, tell us briefly what the DOE standard is.
The DOE standard is the main standard, I'm sorry. In other words, does someone understand the nature and effect of voting? And that was the case with Doe v. Roe.
Yeah,
and
John Doe.
That, you know, there is a lot of that going on. Nursing home workers and poll workers are actually making that decision. And I don't think that either of them should be making that decision. I think, you know, if you're going to take away somebody's a fundamental right, that needs to be taken away by a court. It does not need to be taken away by somebody who does not understand, who's an election official, does not necessarily understand a competency standard. So that's our concern, and we're really we like these ideas of, you know, conforming to the standard in Doe v. Roe, but we're just concerned, you know, taking it a step further and actually having lay people do these testing is really problematic.
We're talking.
Excuse me,
I have to cut in here to say that we're talking about the issue of mental competence and voting, and that you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Dr. Karlowicz, go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you.
You know, I'm with what Ms. Walsh has said. I think election officials, not lay people who have been trained in administering a Doe test, could plausibly be people who could decide in tough cases whether or not this person's capable of voting when that arises. It's a fairly simple standard. It's two questions, and it's better than what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm. Let's get a listener involved in the conversation. Brian joins us on the line from San Francisco.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to mention that I am a practitioner. I work with people with disabilities, kids and adults, and one of the things that I've noticed this year is that a lot of the people with disabilities are extremely heavily influenced by the people that surround them, and because their cognitive abilities are compromised, I'm finding that for example, people I work with who are 20 to 30 who still live with their families, I would say at least 95% of them are voting for that which their parents, the candidate which the parents are voting for. And I've even had one client come up to me yesterday and is feeling some stress because they want to please their parents and they don't know who to vote for and they don't really understand the particular issues at hand. And so I think what I'm saying as a concern, I am, of course, a strong advocate for individuals with disabilities to have rights of all kinds, but I'm concerned if they are under the guidance or have a guardianship, they are voting and they are affecting what's going to happen in the world. And I don't know how much their voice is independently made.
Yeah, Brian, as someone who works with these people, though, it's not easy to make that determination, is it?
Oh, it's a huge can of worms.
Yeah. Let me ask Christina Galindo Walsh about Brian's point.
I think Brian, you know, has a good point, I think. But I think a lot of individuals out there are very much influenced by family and friends. Perhaps more so some individuals, whether they have a disability or not, over some other ones. But, you know, the Doe standard is, does the individual understand the nature and the effect of the act of voting? You know, we're not going out and testing your average person who's being coerced into to voting a certain way. I mean, coercion, this doesn't really talk about, you know, that kind of fraud. This could happen to anyone, not just people with disabilities. And, again, my concern is that we're targeting this group. See, it started with individuals with dementia, but we're just going to start. It's going to be a slippery slope and open up to all individuals with disabilities.
And Dr. Karlowicz, we just have 30 seconds or so left, but people vote for all kinds of reasons. The color of a candidate's pants.
And that's fine. It's the issue here is an educated electorate. As Ms. Walsh is saying, the issue is, do you know that on election day, we pick the next governor by casting votes, and whoever is the winner, whoever gets the most votes is the winner. If you understand those two things, you're competent to vote. If you're voting because your mom picked them or whatnot, who you're picking, that's not the issue. The interesting issue that's raised by your caller is another argument for why election officials need to go to these facilities to handle the voting matters and take it out of the responsibility of those who are taking care of them.
Brian, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And our thanks to our two guests, Dr. Jason Karlowicz. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dr. Karlowicz, assistant professor at the Division of Geriatrics at the University of Pennsylvania and member of the Dementia Voting Project. And our thanks, too, to Christina Galindo Walsh. It's Talk of the Nation, NPR News.